My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. We hope you'll stay tuned. I am very pleased to have with us Professor Victoria O'Donnell. Professor O'Donnell, thank you for being with us today.
I'm glad to be here.
Well, we appreciate that you were able to be with us to talk about the topics of propaganda and persuasion. And Victoria O'Donnell sent me a short copy of her curriculum vitae. And Victoria O'Donnell is professor of communications and director of the University Honors Program at Montana State University, Bozeman. She taught at the American Institute of Foreign Studies in London, is author of Persuasion and Interactive Dependency Approach, Propaganda and Persuasion, which is going into its third printing, and also a new book that's going to be coming out in the year 2000, Television Criticism. She's taught in Germany, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, and Wales, and has also served as a consultant to U.S. government, state senators, and also American corporations. Professor O'Donnell, we are inundated, bombarded by information on a daily basis. How do we begin to look at what is and what is not propaganda?
Well, that's a good question, and that's what I teach when I have students in my classes on propaganda and persuasion, because I think that it is the audience's responsibility to be able to evaluate information and then react accordingly. And people do. I think that we have to give people a lot more credit than they get for recognizing that propaganda is just that. And there are many, many instances in which people have recognized it. Propaganda is, as you know, a systematic and very deliberate attempt to shape our perceptions, to manipulate our beliefs, and to direct our behavior to achieve a response that furthers the desired intent of the propagandist and does not necessarily do any good for the receiver of the propaganda. So, first of all, I think we need to understand, explore, analyze propaganda and help us recognize it, and then we can decide whether we want to follow through with what we're being asked to do.
Talk, if you will, about how we analyze and explore propaganda.
Okay. First of all, I think it helps a great deal if you know where it's coming from. Now, that's not always possible, but usually propaganda is going to be institutional. And more often than not, because it is institutional, it's pretty hard to hide the source. It's a little easier to do historical analyses of propaganda, but in this day and age, you can, if you explore enough, find out where it's coming from. Once you know that, and you know what the purpose and the motive of the institution is, and especially what its ideology is, then you can start looking at the strategies. And if you recognize that strategies are just that, then you can evaluate them. And for example, one of the key factors in propaganda is what we call resonance. That is, when you get a message or you see an image, you respond as if it were coming from your own belief system. You say, oh, yeah, I believe in that, or that's something that I need, or that's something that I want. And that is the strongest kind of belief alteration, because we believe that we're making the decision ourselves. I think it's important to recognize that I don't take necessarily a negative view of propaganda. There are different kinds. For example, in the book Propaganda and Persuasion, the one you mentioned when you introduced me, I describe three kinds of propaganda: white, black, and gray. These aren't my terms. These have been used for decades. But white propaganda is generally accurate information with a source that is known. For example, the Voice of America, our institutionalized radio propaganda and television propaganda that we've used abroad for 50-some years, is generally you're getting accurate information, but it tends to be one-sided information. That is, it will stress the desirability of democracy and freedom and free choice. So there's nothing inaccurate about that, but it's certainly slanted toward our country's ideology. Black propaganda is what we usually think of when we think of Nazi propaganda, the big lie. It's often credited to a false source, and it's deceitful. And then gray propaganda is somewhere in between, and sometimes the source is identified correctly, sometimes it isn't, and sometimes the information is accurate, and sometimes it isn't. In 1961, when the Bay of Pigs invasion took place in Cuba, the Voice of America denied any U.S. involvement in the activities, which, of course, we know were CIA-backed. So that would be considered gray. The source was known, but the information wasn't accurate. So I think if you recognize that propaganda isn't necessarily deceitful, but it can be very one-sided, then we can start looking at it in that way as well.
We're talking with Professor Victoria O'Donnell about propaganda and persuasion. Professor O'Donnell, it seems to me that just like life, there's probably much less black and white propaganda, and the vast majority of propaganda, of course, is gray.
Yes, I agree.
Talk, if you will, a little bit about that, because it seems to me that when you're getting this mix of, some truth, some lie, some transparency, some covertness, that's got to be the absolute hardest morass for someone to try and work their way through.
Well, I think a good place to start, because it's fairly easy to analyze, is advertising. Nearly all advertising, especially product advertising, is propaganda. And I think that we can safely say that falls in the gray area, because it relies heavily on manipulated images and language. And it also relies heavily on tapping into our psychological needs. So a product will be presented to us in terms of something that we need, and then offers to fill that need, when in fact all it's going to fill is the company's pockets.
Right.
Yeah. So, and that's fairly obvious. And most people know that. And yet we like advertising. It's enjoyable. It's some of the best stuff on television. And so because we like it, we may follow through and buy the product, even though we somewhere in the recesses of our mind know that it's not going to do everything it promises to do. So I think that's a really good place to start. And then you can start looking at things like corporation year-end reports. There's a very good example of propaganda. Sure, the information's probably going to be very accurate, and most likely all of the sources will be identified, but it's going to be very slanted to present a certain kind of perception of that company. And that's a little tougher, because a lot of that information is hard to get at. But I think if we look at all the messages that we have in our midst, in our own culture, it's not too difficult to start seeing it for what it is. Now, one of the tougher areas these days is the Internet, because we don't always know where it's coming from, what the source is. And so we haven't really figured out a way to determine the accuracy of that information, except what I would just tell people is don't always believe what you see and read. Check it out for yourself.
Well, that's always very, very good advice. It's really interesting, because I do a lot of work on the Internet, and in particular, I also peruse a lot of the news groups, and I'm seeing now that there's this whole momentum that is being built, that JFK Jr. was actually murdered, that this was all some sort of conspiratorial plot and all of that. And I just know that that's going to keep building, because people are going to say, oh, did you hear, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And what will happen is that perhaps a giant conspiracy and a plot will be created simply out of thin air, out of one email or out of one news group posting. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Well, absolutely. And of course, propaganda thrives on rumors.
Right.
Rumors get planted deliberately by propagandists because they know that it's the human condition to be rumor mongers.
Yeah.
We enjoy hearing gossip, and we enjoy hearing stories that have sensational aspects to them. So, that's something that a propagandist will take advantage of. I do want to say, however, though, that the Internet is serving some groups very well, because one of the things that makes propaganda more effective is when information sources are controlled. For example, in the former communist era, when there was only one political party, one newspaper, one source of information, people couldn't dig up the other side. And there are certain groups, like, for example, the Chiapas in Chihuahua, Mexico, who are using the Internet to get their message out to the world. And in China, for example, although the Chinese have attempted to block access to sensitive Internet sites, I read an article in the Washington Post not long ago that a man named Tian Suning, who is educated here in the United States, is attempting to inform the Chinese people about their environmental problems over the Internet, and he's having a certain amount of success. So, in fact, this is nice. He compares the Internet to the invention of the printing press.
Well, certainly.
I think it has its upside and its downside.
Oh, absolutely. We're talking with Professor Victoria O'Donnell, Professor of Communications at Montana State University, Bozeman. We're also discussing propaganda and persuasion. This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. Professor O'Donnell, are you ready to take a phone call?
Sure.
Hey, you mentioned the difference between harmless and harmful propaganda. You call them white, gray, and black. And why couldn't you get to what really is the definition of propaganda? And I always thought that it was something that was used exclusively by evil totalitarian dictators like Hitler and Mussolini to get their particular points of view across. But now I have the opinion that it is something which is not necessarily news, is not necessarily true or accurate, but simply the verbal ammunition which politicians use, even if they do get elected to high office, in which different conflicting organizations such as Republican and Democrat use to knock each other down. So it's not something that's necessarily accurate. It's closer to the Machiavellian concept of so-called political science. Would you comment, please?
Thank you for calling in.
Thank you for your question. Yes, I'm glad you mentioned the political campaigning, because I think that it is fair to say that some of it is very propagandistic and some of it isn't. Back in the days when we had more traditional politics and we weren't so inundated with lobbyists and heavy campaign contributions, a politician could use persuasion. That is to say, and I think that persuasion differs from propaganda in that in persuasion, both parties benefit. The politician asks for our vote in exchange for doing something for his constituents or for an issue or for some particular bill that is important to the people who vote for him. And then, if he doesn't follow through or she doesn't follow through, then we don't vote for him or her the next time. So that's how persuasion works. But in today's big time campaigning, with so much stress on images and language manipulation, we don't always know what a politician stands for. We know what he or she looks like and what the slogans are and the songs and the little video vignette. And it's really time, I think, for people to start being critical of that and to demand answers to what the politicians can do for us, and not to vote for people because they happen to be handsome or beautiful. And I think that's our responsibility.
You bring up a couple of very, very good points, I think. And one is that the difference between propaganda, if you will, and persuasion is that, you know, persuasion is, I'm going to stand here and tell you what I believe and what I think we should do. And I'm going to tell you that in a very straightforward manner. And hopefully I'm going to be able to give you, you know, factual information that's going to convince you that what I'm saying is correct. As compared to this sort of deceptive sleight of hand image over substance kind of thing that we've got now. I mean, that's what I'm hearing you say, correct?
Yes, that's exactly right.
The other part in this is that in talking with other people, the American, if you will, propaganda machine is not the propaganda machine that perhaps existed in Nazi Germany. I mean, it's a very, very sophisticated multi-billion-dollar industry, isn't it, Professor O'Donnell?
Oh, absolutely. For example, the pharmaceutical companies, they have really advertised widely, especially in magazines. Americans are very concerned with health, and pharmaceutical companies are pushing brands when generics are available to us at much, much less in terms of cost, and they're just as effective. So it's and I have a case study in the book about pharmaceutical company that manufactures the hormone, the female hormone estrogen, and they have been extremely successful in keeping the generics off the market by campaign contributions and political lobbying. And there are also Premarin, the estrogen, is made from horse urine. And there are synthetic estrogens available that work just as well. But this is the largest pharmaceutical company in the United States, and this is their major product. So they use a great deal of muscle to prevent any kind of competition. And that's you're right, it's very complex. And how are we to know? I mean, normally we believe we can trust agencies that push health products, don't we?
Well, we'd like to hope so, but we actually know better than that, don't we? We're talking with Professor Victoria O'Donnell about propaganda and persuasion. Caller, you're live on the air.
Hi. Professor, thanks for the interesting discussion. It does seem to me, though, that politicians are treated no differently in advertising from any other product, and that the treatment that you're talking about is merely one described by a historian called William Leach in a book called Land of Desire, where a product is associated with an unrelated idea that reaches for some deep-seated human feeling of feeling okay about yourself or feeling pleasure, and that this occurs in history around the time that Freud discovers the unconscious. That all being said, it doesn't seem very likely that we'll be able to change advertising. How can politics be removed from the sphere of advertising's effect? What specific measures would you suggest?
Oh, I wish I knew the answer to that. I think it lies in ourselves. I think that we, the voters, have to be more demanding. We've got to pay more attention to issues. We've got to do research, and we've got to ask hard questions. We're letting our politicians get away with too much, and it's our responsibility, you know, in a free society, to to take that responsibility and give it back to the politicians. So many voters really don't do research on vital issues, and we're sitting back and letting this happen. I think that we just have to work a little harder, and maybe then they will pony up and give us those straightforward, factual answers. I also think that what's happening in government, this is my personal opinion, but I think what's happening in government is what we're letting the lobbyists do the work that we should be doing. We're the ones who should be writing letters and using the email and sending postcards, making phone calls, letting them know that we're out here and that we're very interested in what they're doing in Washington.
We've been speaking with Victoria O'Donnell, who is professor of communication and director of the university's honors program at Montana State University, Bozeman, also author of Persuasion and Interactive Dependency Approach and Propaganda and Persuasion, which will be coming out in its third edition this month, I believe, and also will be writing her newest book, which will be coming out in the year 2000, Television Criticism. Professor O'Donnell, we just have a couple of minutes left. Do you have a final thought for our audience today?
Yes, I think I would like to say that it's important that we give ourselves credit for our own intelligence and that we recognize that we're smart and that we can see through these attempts to manipulate us. And in doing that, then I suspect that propagandists will have to work harder to find strategies to push their product.
Well, we certainly need to make them earn their money if that's the line of work they're going to be in, correct?
Yes.
Professor Victoria O'Donnell, thank you for being with us on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for this edition of the program. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. If you're interested in copies of this or other Full Logic Reverse programs, you can contact us via email at flr@jps.net or by telephone at area code 530-265-9462. Full Logic Reverse is produced at FLR Studios in Nevada City, California, USA. Our music is by Rick Payne. We hope you'll join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.